All right. Hello. You are listening to The Real World on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the unceded territories of Musqueam people at the University of British Columbia. The Real World, if you're not a regular listener, is UBC Film Society's radio segment where we talk about all things film related. I'm Lily, as usual, and I'm joined by
Emma
and a very special guest.
Hannah.
Hannah, thank you so much for coming on today. We're so excited. We're not going to tell you exactly what we're going to talk about yet. You'll have to wait for after the advertisements. First things first, though, film sock updates.
Film sock updates.
Not only do we host a radio show, but we host a lot of other things as well. We have weekly double features. We have pub nights, beer gardens, all sorts of things. So please keep an eye out. You can check our Instagram at UBC Film Society for all of our events. And today, it's an extremely important day to stay updated on Film Sock events because we'll be screening at the Norm around 6 p.m. Well, first, we'll have a quick election. But really, you got to come because it's Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. It's going to be super fun to watch it. You just have to come, listen to our speeches, you know, hear a little bit of a preamble, a year recap, vote in the elections. Anyway, it'll be super, super quick. Don't even worry. And then we'll get right into the screening. And you should come and you should vote because that's like if you want to keep hearing me and Emma on the radio.
Yeah.
This could be it for us. it's all riding on your guys' vote. So this could be our last episode. I'm just kidding. It's not our last episode. We'll have other stuff going on too. But yeah, please come vote tonight, 6 p.m. The Norm, which is in the Life Building on campus across from the Starbucks. But first things first, before we hop into today's episode, we'll do some ads. So we'll be right back.
Moon River, the collaborative new project from members of the Juno-nominated Indie Folk Mainstays, The Wooden Sky and Linda Ortega, Kathleen Edwards, and Corb Lund's bands, could easily be described as a supergroup of sorts. Not just because of their collective talents, but because the music on their debut album, Volume 1, is simply super. Their knack for creating sonic worlds that are at once lightly trippy and wholly inviting means that as much as they draw on inspirations from decades past, they maintain a pleasing, distinctly out-of-time feel. Described as Buddy Holly meets krautrock, it's something that you need to hear to fully comprehend. And Vancouverites will have the chance on April 5th at Green Autobody at 1822 Pandora Street, alongside Brandon Wolf Scott and Jody Glenham. Advance tickets are on sale now via Eventbrite for $22.63. So get yours now and mark your calendar to see Moon River live on Friday, April 5th. MRG Live presents Shred Kelly at the Biltmore Cabaret on March 29th, 2024, with special guest Hyenas. Hailing from the Canadian Rockies, Shred Kelly is a powerhouse band that seamlessly blends elements of alternative, folk, and rock, making them a mainstay in the Canadian music scene. With a reputation for dynamic live performances, you won't want to miss their Blurry Vision album release tour. Check out Shred Kelly at the Biltmore Cabaret on March 29th, 2024. Tickets are on sale now at admitone.com.
We all know that the word jazz means many different things to many different people, so check out The Real Deal on The Jazz Show at CITR 101.9 FM or CITR.ca for live streaming. Yours truly, Gavin Walker, is your host, and I guarantee the straight goods of 3 hours of jazz at its finest. The jazz feature that focuses on a concept, an album, or an individual artist will be heard at the beginning of the show every Monday night, right at 9 p.m., after our opening theme and announcement. So come on by and give your ears a musical workout. 9 p.m. Mondays. Don't miss it.
Are you interested in playing, watching, or discussing all things cricket? Look no further than UBC's Cricket Club. Reach out to @AMSUBCCricketClub on Instagram to get connected today.
Yahoo! Okay, and we're back. Again, this is the real world. All things film related, that's what we talk about, and today, specifically, we're doing our full episode on Dune.
Dune!
We're very pumped about this. Our special guests, Hannah and Emma, chose this topic. Why do you guys want to talk about Dune today?
I think we saw both Dunes together for like the first time.
Okay.
So it's like, you know, oh my God, bonding experience. And also well, like...
this is your thing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. And there's just like such an insane movie series.
It's just like taken over my life.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, fair enough. It's our everything.
Yeah. No, I love.
But you guys haven't read the book.
No.
No, but I want to.
I haven't tackled it. I'm scared of it. It's like, how many pages is it? Like,
it's
500?
Big. Yeah. Yeah. I'm scared of it, too.
I saw that there's 23 in total.
Oh, my God.
Like, the six first ones are, like, the main ones you're supposed to read, but there's 23 overall, which is, like.
Good Lord.
23?
Don't quote me on that, but, like, that's.
Okay.
Yeah.
Don't quote Hannah on this. But, again, we do accept love and hate mail, yeah. So please send us mail. But have you guys seen the earlier film?
The 1984 one?
Yeah.
I have not.
I haven't, but I want to watch it because yeah. I like David Lynch. And so I want to see, like, if it's, you know, that bad.
I know. I was reading about what he said about it. Like, it's like, oh. He's very upset about it. I was, like, about to tear up of saying that, like, I guess he didn't really get to, like, have the artistic vision he wanted with it.
Oh, my God.
And so, like, he can't even stand to, like, watch anything Dune-related nowadays because he's so upset with, like, the way the first one was, like, panned out and how it was received.
That's
so
crazy.
So he said he has no interest in seeing the new ones at all because it's just, like, too gut-wrenching because he had such a vision or something.
Yeah.
Related to that. So, yeah. And now I'm just, like, curious. Like, I want to see the 1984 one just for this fact, but also I feel kind of bad about it.
I know. Right? Poor David.
I mean, it still has its, like, a following. Yeah. I wouldn't say they might not be, like, fans in the typical yeah. sense of the word.
It actually, it got nominated for an Academy Award, David Lynch's Dune.
For what?
It did?
For Best Sound.
Oh.
In 1984, yeah. It lost to Amadeus, but
okay, so they're fine.
It got nominated, which is still insane. The whole movie in general is so crazy how many times it, like, changed hands before it got
yeah.
to, like, David Lynch.
Oh, yeah?
Like, oh my God, there was this French director, Alejandro Jodorowsky,
okay.
who was originally going to do it, and his cast was wild. He won Salvador Dali, Orson Welles, and Mick Jagger with his son
no.
as Paul.
I want to see
real.
It. I yeah. want to see it.
And then they didn't end up doing it because
why?
It was going to be 10 hours long. The runtime was going to be 10 hours.
A mini-series.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Like, that would be crazy. That would go insane nowadays.
Good God.
Bring it back. But yeah, they made like a documentary on it in 2013 or something.
About
his attempt to make
his
Dune.
Attempt.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
So
I guess we could watch that.
Yeah.
To get a feel for it.
So much Dune content. This is crazy.
And then but then it was passed over out of his hands yeah. to Lynch or
to
do you think it turned over a couple of
It
times?
Turned over again to this Italian producer Dino De Laurentiis.
Okay.
But then he was like, I can't even do this, and then gave it to David Lynch.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. Yeah.
Which is like, I don't know. That's crazy that you did that. shameful secret. I thought David Lynch was Canadian for a really long time. So
oh.
I'm like, oh, this is such a Canadian franchise. But
yeah. Aw.
No.
No.
He's just
okay.
some guy who's
well,
not
still,
Canadian. I was like, okay.
I mean, having even more than one Canadian in the crew of this one is still, like,
exactly.
exciting.
Yeah. A win for Canada.
It's a win for Canada. We made it. We made Dune. And we made it as a country.
Exactly.
But so as fans, I guess, like, was the build-up mm-hmm. then to the first one coming out in theaters a big deal for you guys?
I Actually, I wasn't even aware of it.
Okay,
I
mean, yeah.
It wasn't even on my radar when it first came out. Like, I watched it when the Film Society screened it.
Okay.
However many weeks ago that was.
God, we have such good screenings over
guys,
there. Like, wow.
Come out to the screenings.
Please.
Do it. You two can watch something as life-changing as Dune at the Film Society.
Okay, I guess so then it's weird. It feels almost, like, off because everyone has all these big expectations. Like, with a franchise mm-hmm. like this, like, it's like... Not to, I don't know if it's like controversial to relate it to Star Wars. We'll get into that later. But like with a big franchise like this, so many people have huge expectations. Like adaptation is such a tricky thing. Like
yeah.
book to film, what's that going to look like? Is it going to live up to people's standards? But I guess all of us, for you listeners, we went in with fresh eyes. Mm-hmm. I don't think any of the three of us like super had expectations, which has its downfalls. Like we didn't have some of the knowledge, I guess, but also it's kind of nice to just like go in, and this was like our first encounter with the Dune universe, I guess, was kind of also pretty exciting for me at least.
Yeah. No, just even getting to like see everything on such a scale,
oh my gosh.
Yeah. That's kind of the beauty of like just sci-fi movies and like Dune in particular, just mm-hmm. how intentional everything is. It's like, oh my god, like such a beautiful movie that yeah. you're just sitting there and you're kind of like, okay, this is 3 hours long, but it's a pretty 3 hours.
Oh,
like, I'm
is.
Having a good time.
The whole time I was watching it, I was just like, imagine being part of this, like, yeah. the scale, like you
oh,
said.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, insane. My goodness.
Okay, like... so then tell us a bit about, like, first reactions. Like, what, Hannah, like, when you walked out of the theater, like, what is it, like, top four? Put it in the top four. Like, what was your first reaction rating?
I mean, okay, I love it, but it's definitely not, like, it's not in the top four
okay.
for me, but I did really enjoy it. And, like, I was just, like, in awe of, like, you know when you're watching a movie and you're, like, there's no way, like, what I'm seeing is, like,
yeah,
like actually uh-huh. something that's been created and, like,
absolutely.
I get to view. Mm-hmm. It was, like, that for me. Like, I was just in total awe. And, like, and then seeing the second one, which I did enjoy more, yeah. I think.
Where'd you guys see that one, by the way?
We saw at the Scotiabank Theater.
Yeah, and we bought the ticket,
yeah.
and then we get into the theater, not realizing that it's that, like, Screen X
oh,
thing.
Oh, yeah.
So it's, like, all around you.
Okay,
and
I haven't seen that.
We just, like, looked things. At each other, and we were like, what is going on? Because it was thankfully not for the whole movie.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it was a little distracting at
yeah,
first.
What do you mean not for the whole movie?
Like, it would just, like, occasionally expand out onto
yeah.
the screens next to you, and you're like, okay.
Oh.
Mostly for, like, the, like, scenes when they're outside on the desert. Or, like, on Arrakis.
Okay, and then they would, like, expand the landscape.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you would see, like, lumps, like, waiting, and then it would, like, come, like, it would be a person, like, coming onto screen. So it's kind of, like, weird, but...
I can't even imagine that. I'll have to see it for myself. That's strange. I mean, I guess I was thinking about, like, the contrast between some of the shots of, like, there's a lot of stuff of them, one person is seen, like, walking down a corridor, like, in between a valley or in a cave, and it's, like, mm-hmm. that contrast to, like, extreme expanses, like, desert upon desert, like, or even infinite water. So I guess that would kind of maybe add a little bit to that, like, mm-hmm. especially if it's, like, the scenes where they're in a corridor or, like, a cave somewhere condensed, the actual screen is condensed
yeah.
a little bit, and then when you get to expand, you really get
oh,
to expand.
Yeah. It's out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I know just even, like, cinematography-wise, like, I know the director, he was big on, like, making sure that the film was kind of shot largely in extremes. Like, it would either be, like, super, super extreme long shots or, like, mm-hmm. extreme, like, close-ups and
yeah.
that sort of thing. And I think that's, like, that's a really interesting sort of take, especially with sci-fi. Like, you know... I don't know, you think of, like, yeah, Star Wars or Star Trek, and it's a lot of, like, pretty standard run-of-the-mill, like, oh, medium shot.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, they're in a room, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's standard, but, yeah, like, to focus on both of those extremes, I think, creates, like, it really gives you a sense of the world and the
yeah.
characters, the inner worlds of the characters.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Okay, so when, for Dune 1, Part 1,
mm-hmm.
the film did... amazing. They got, like, a lot of nominations, and then they won 6 Academy Awards.
Oh, yeah.
I guess we wanted to talk a little bit, because we recently had our episode on the Oscars
mm-hmm.
of, like, what are we thinking? What's going to happen with Dune Part 2? Where is it going in the Oscar season? Or what do you think it would have done if it was in this past one? Like, if it was released last year, like, do you think it would have stolen a lot of, like, I don't know, would all poor things wins
yeah.
be gone? I don't know.
I think it definitely would have put up, like, it would have been some competition,
yeah.
especially, like, visual effects and
yeah,
maybe
agree.
Costumes.
Yeah.
So, like, those are, like, insane. Oh, my gosh.
Like, the Bene Gesserit costumes. Oh, yeah. And Florence Pugh's characters. Yeah. All, like, the bead work and stuff.
Oh, oh yeah.
Yeah, the costumes.
So intricate.
They've got to do well.
And I was reading that they didn't use any zippers or buttons because they thought it would, like, mess up the look of everything.
Oh, like,
so,
it looks like... Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Which is, like, kind of crazy when you consider the scale that they're making these costumes on. And they're like, yeah. No, none of that.
No easy way out.
Oh, yeah. Right. At least with the costumes where they're on, like, Arrakis. Like, there was none of that for that. I'm not sure about, like, some of the other ones, but those in particular were very much, like, a natural sort of focus.
Interesting.
It's interesting.
What do you think about, like, the acting performances? Do you think those will go anywhere?
I don't know.
It's not, like, a focus point.
I don't know. Because I think, as skeptical as I was of Timothée Chalamet as Paul,
yeah,
I think he is kind of killing it.
He is.
He's been kind of going crazy. I'm like, yeah, yeah, he's doing good.
Yeah.
But I don't know, like, if it was this award season, I don't know if he would have been, I don't know if he would have put up enough of a fight to beat out Cillian Murphy.
I agree. I don't think
he
would
have. No. Yeah. No way. Yeah. I'm not sure. I know. I wish I had, this is one of the moments where I wish I had the book reference so that I could understand what people are saying of, like, he's just not our Paul, or, like, this isn't the right, like, actor for this role. I really have no clue, but I guess I'm just going off of what they say, and maybe I listened or read something from the director. Try to pronounce it. Denis Villeneuve?
Yeah.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah.
And apparently, well, he was just, like, he's in awe. Like, he read the books as a teenager, like, 13 years old, and then when he saw that, or when Timothée was Chalamet was cast, he was like, this is perfect, like, this is my Paul. So
yeah,
I'm going with that. I guess we should trust him. Like, I guess he kind of knows what he's talking about.
yeah
I'm not sure if these will go anywhere. I was thinking about, like, I was reading some debates about, like, Austin Butler's, or maybe the actress who plays the mom.
Rebecca Ferguson.
Also, people were saying maybe there's, like, a little bit of talk of her getting recognized.
I
could see a supporting actress nomination for her.
She, like, was creeping me out.
Yeah, she's really compelling, especially in the second one. Like,
oh my gosh.
There's no way she would have gotten anything for the first one, I think. I don't know if she did.
She's so scary in the second one.
Yeah, she's terrifying.
I know. Talking to the fetus. Oh,
my God. That was freaky. I know, but she's also, like, so beautiful that, like, she's, I'm, like, freaked out by her, but also, like, I can't take my eyes off her.
And then once, like, you know, her eyes go blue,
blue eyes, I'm like, oh my gosh, they're all, like, so hypnotizing. I guess, like, that's kind of maybe the vibe that she's supposed to be giving off as a Bene Gesserit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Hypnotizing, because she has, like, the voice.
Exactly.
Yeah, is that the right term for that?
I think so.
Yeah.
Now that I'm, like, thinking about that, I feel like, I mean, obviously Paul is, like, the Messiah and everything, but I feel like they didn't really, like, talk about his, like, actual, like, powers that he, like, could, I don't know if powers is the right word, but, like, I don't know, it's not as, like, in the first one, it's like, oh, like, he's learning to use the voice. I guess he just so quickly accepted.
I love how she's always, like, your tone was off, like, she's so mom. Like, he's also learning this, like, massive, like, controlling, like, power to make people kill, like, horrible things, and she's like, watch your tone, sweetie. That was a little bit pitchy. I'm like, I'm so scared of you, but also I feel like my mom would be saying things like that too.
Oh yeah, no, she's nailing it. Like, she's definitely one of the best performances in that. I agree.
Yeah, I could see award season being kind to her.
Yeah. Should we listen to a song? Which song did we want to listen to first?
Ooh, I have a song from 1984's Dune by Toto, the band.
To get us in the movie.
Yeah.
Because that's what we're going to be watching soon.
Exactly.
Now that we're obsessed with it. Yes.
Yeah. You got to go through all of it. Yeah. Big battle. Okay, Toto. Let's hit it.
Let's hit it. Thank you. Okay. Thank you, Toto, for that. We're getting into our Toto era, apparently. Exactly. That was from the 1984 Dune. But we are mostly talking about the recent 2021-2024 Dune adaptations. Right now, we're getting into a little bit of a section. Emma, do you want to introduce us?
Yeah. I am going to be talking about the new Star Wars trilogy versus Dune. Just kind of like all these different sci-fi franchises and how they've been dealing with just being in the 21st century, I guess. That's okay. Not a very good description of it, but here we go. Yeah,
because no, I think that's like, a really interesting topic, though.
Oh, I guess, like, you know, you have the original Star Wars trilogy, yeah, and the prequels. Have you seen you? I know, Hannah, you haven't seen any Star Wars content.
I've never watched a single Star Wars movie.
I've seen. It's okay. We forgive you.
I used to watch that one animated show that was on Disney XD,
Clone
though.
Wars.
I was, yeah. So that counts for something.
I don't know that one. I think I've seen like various bits and pieces because my brother was obsessed with them. And I've definitely seen a couple of them in theaters. I can't even name which one specifically.
That's fair. That's fair.
Yeah.
You know, but I think all you need to know is that the first three, the original trilogy, yeah, that's a banger. You know, that's a very solid trilogy. The prequels have their like issues for sure. Jar Jar Binks. What? Why did they do that? But it's still solid, you know, it stands on its own.
Okay.
And then the sequels, they're kind of a mess.
Yeah.
Like the first one, The Force Awakens, I think it's 2016 or 2017, came out. That was a banger. Like I saw it in theaters. I'm like, okay, we're going somewhere with this. Mm-hmm. Then The Last Jedi came out and it just basically retconned everything The Force Awakens did and then tried to go its own direction. Then the third one, Rise of Skywalker, retconned The Last Jedi and tried to go in its own direction. So you get to the end, it's just kind of flickered out. And you're like, okay, that's awesome. But I think that's just kind of almost indicative of like a problem within the Star Wars universe as a whole. Like the editor of the original films, Maria Lucas, mm-hmm, she didn't like how the new Star Wars movies went, the direction they took,
okay,
namely how they, spoilers, killed off the core three and continue to put out movies.
How could you? How could
I know, I'm sorry.
I was just about to watch all of
God,
them.
God, you're going to go home and binge like 12
okay
movies.
We support spoilers.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But yeah, just like she thinks the magic is kind of gone now from Star Wars. Like it's just they're pumping out like TV shows like every year. And like Andor was good. But then
did you guys watch Mandalorian?
Yeah, I think like it started off really strong.
Yeah, I watched the first
season.
Bit.
Yeah, that's actually the same cinematographer for Dune.
Oh, really?
Mandalorian season one. Yeah.
Oh.
So they
was
got
it
him.
Greg Fraser?
Yeah, that's him.
Okay.
He did Rogue One as well. So he's dabbled in both. Got some crossover there.
Okay.
Yeah, I think honestly, like, kind of where Star Wars has failed in its recent stuff, where it's kind of disjointed and it feels like they don't have anything they're working towards. Like, with Dune, you get this very purposeful sense that, like, especially like Danae, like, he's got very much like he's working towards something. You know, there is a story that's been thought out. He's thinking of the end at the beginning, which I think is so important when you're making like multiple movies. Like, you can't just be like, we'll figure it out as we go. Like, you need to make the movies intentionally.
Yeah.
And
he's taking his time.
Exactly.
With it. He's not like rushing through.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly how much stuff he skipped from the book,
mm-hmm,
but I feel like it helps the momentum build when it kind of feels like it's taking it slow. I feel like that was a big critique of the first one, that people were like bored and like nothing much happened, but we needed that context,
exactly,
I guess, when you're building a universe as big as this one.
Yeah. It feels like nice that he's like taking his time. Like clearly this is a very personal project for him, and he's expressed that like he read the book when he was a teen or whatever, and like he's like just been like so involved with like the making of this, obviously.
Yeah.
And I think that really contrasts like when you compare it with Star Wars, which is there's obviously always a lot of comparisons drawn between the two,
mm-hmm,
but it's just like you can feel like how much more care has been put into Dune than kind of what's been happening like with the Star Wars sequels.
Hot take.
Yeah,
I believe it.
Yeah, this is like
we're getting confirmation from our other experts as well. We'll reveal who those people are later, or that person. On this topic, while we were just on Star Wars, I was also looking into a little bit of the stuff of, like, worry in a world where there's only so many massive sci-fi franchises, and these are two of the big ones, like Star Wars and Dune right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And really, I guess, making sure that where some similarities are of, like, space travel, like, going planet to planet, that we really see different things and that it doesn't look like I guess that certain aspects are like being borrowed or something.
Yeah.
Like, how do you feel about, did you feel like it was like there were any parts that were too similar?
I don't think so. I think they did a really good job of differentiating, especially because both of them kind of like, you know, they both take place in like sand planets. Like, you've got like Arrakis, you've got Tatooine, and that's like, there's obviously like areas where that could maybe cause overlap and like beyond the like they're in sand.
Yeah.
It's pretty separate, I'd say. Like, I think beyond the obvious, just like, oh, they're in space and it's sci-fi. They feel like very distinctly different, and they look like very distinctly different franchises as well. And, like, you can kind of tell. I think, like, if you're shown a still from one, you'd be like, oh, that's Dune, or oh, that's Star Wars. I think laying down that, like, visual identity is so important and something they really did well, like, with Dune.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just, it looks so visually, like, recognizable and just stunning. Like, you're like, yeah, that's Dune. This is so cool. This is so, like, amazing. And yeah, we'll get into the set design and lighting later, but
we'll do a little song and then get into set design. But one of the things I was thinking about is what Patrice Vermette, I'm not sure, don't quote me, okay, but when he was talking about doing the set design for Dune and not wanting to, not even just like plagiarism, but just literally trying to create like something completely like a unique look. And did you see, he said something about like using his son as a reference of like making sure none of these things look too similar to any like video games or movies that are coming out lately.
Like showing him sketches and being like, does this look like Star Wars?
Yeah.
And
like, no. I like that.
He's like,
the double checking to make sure we're getting like the complete new look. And yeah, I agree. It does. It's got its uniqueness to it. But yeah, we'll play a little something from Star Wars. While we're on the topic, which one are we playing?
I think this is from Force Awakens. This is Rey's Theme by John Williams.
Perfect. Here we are.
Thank you.
Okay, we're back. Again, this is The Real World. If you're just tuning in now, it's the UBC Film Society's radio segment. And if you aren't just tuning in now, you know that this is an episode all about Dune. And we know it's supposed to be all about Dune. But also, we're going to talk a little bit more about Star Wars because we just got another resident expert or someone with strong opinions.
Ba-da-da-da, I'm back. It's Wes from the Oscar episode. Yes. You might recognize me. That was the last episode you guys did, right? The one I was on?
Yeah.
So twice in a row. I just can't get enough. It's like a drug. It's like this is my spice. Yeah. Is the real coming on the real
yes,
world.
Yes, I love it. I'm excited. We're going to see you like tapping on the window outside of the booth next time. Hey, guys.
Try to crawl in.
Can I come in? Yeah. Okay, so but while we're still not too far away from our little chat about Star Wars, hot take.
Okay, well, I was listening to Emma. I was kind of just sitting in the corner peeking in while she was rambling about Star Wars. And there were so many points that I wanted to jump in. I'm probably going to forget a couple, but like the prequels, I agree with you, flawed. But Revenge of the Sith, the third one as a movie, in my opinion, absolute masterpiece.
Yeah.
The best Star Wars in my top 10 movies of all time. When that movie came out, I was so obsessed with it. This is not an over exaggeration. For like when I was like 4 or 5, I watched that movie 3 times a day. Like before I started preschool, I would just sit at home all day and either watch Revenge of the Sith or the Adam West Batman from like 1968 or 1969 or something like that.
I understand you so much better.
It was
now
yeah,
that I know that this is what you're trying
to explain.
But and then when it comes to the sequels, in a sense, don't kill me. Anyone else that's listening out there, that's a huge fan of Star Wars, don't kill me. I almost, as a whole package, I like the sequels more than I like the prequels. Because I really love The Force Awakens, which I think most people do. But I thought The Last Jedi was great. I thought The Last Jedi was a fantastic movie.
Really?
The Rise of Skywalker, dog shit. The worst Star Wars that's ever been released. Incoherent. The writing is terrible. Makes no sense. But in terms of a whole package, I like 2 movies out of the sequels, and
really?
I only like 1 movie out of the prequels. So if you got to look at that.
Oh, my God.
Sequels over prequels. I know that is a blasphemous take to most.
That's crazy.
But
that
especially
crazy.
For our generation. Yeah. But I don't care. I said it.
Yeah, because I only really like The Force Awakens. I don't like The Last Jedi or Rise of Skywalker, but from the prequels, I definitely Attack of the Clones, something about it. That was my favorite for a while. Growing up, I don't know what it was. There was something about the charm of a middle movie. I was like, oh, this is beautiful.
I love the last 45 minutes of that movie.
Oh, yeah.
Like the huge final battle and the final like Jedi Sith battle.
Beautiful. Yeah.
Amazing. Beautiful. Other than that, though, I think those movies are terrible. Even if I grew up on them, I loved them as a kid, but then as I got older. But then Revenge of the Sith has just always stuck.
Yeah.
And speaking of Revenge of the Sith, you were also mentioning similarities between Dune and Star Wars. And it's been known that George Lucas took a lot of inspiration for Star Wars from the Dune novel.
Oh,
like
yeah.
You said, for like the it being set mainly on a sand planet. But then also the main similarity I saw, especially in the Dune Part 2 movie compared to the book, but the Dune Part 2 movie compared to Revenge of the Sith, I saw so many similarities between Paul and Zendaya's character, Chani. And then Padme and Anakin.
Oh, yeah.
And the similarities between. It's almost like the twink boyfriend turned genocidal dictator.
I saw that tweet.
Cinematic. Yeah. Kind of, you know? So that was the main thing I saw. Like two people that are like madly in love and then completely turn on each other by the end. I think I see the inclinations.
That's I can see the connection. I can see the connection. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways. Those were the hot takes I wanted to get.
I like to draw that comparison. I feel like, it's nice to. Yeah. Connect both together. But we were also talking a little bit earlier in the show about the Oscars. And because Wes was on specifically for our Oscars episode, we wanted to get you back on to give a quick hot take of maybe what would have happened if Dune was a part of this past Oscar award season, or also just what you're hoping for, what you want it to get next time around.
For anyone out there that doesn't know, Dune Part 2 was originally supposed to be released in November. So it would have been eligible for the 2024 Oscars celebrating the 2023 movies. But because of the SAG-AFTRA strikes and the Writers Guild strikes, that never happened. So Dune Part 2 got delayed until March when it just came out earlier this month.
Right.
Or end of February, something like that. But I was wondering, because it was really predicted and still is predicted for next year to be this huge Oscar contender. So I was wondering what Oscars would it have stolen, would it have swiped away from other nominees or even wins from like Oppenheimer and Poor Things mainly?
I know.
Is what I was thinking of.
Yeah. That's so what we were worried about.
I have a few categories we could go over. Like I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 categories that I think Dune Part 2 easily would have gotten nominated for and may have slightly made a race.
Okay, what do you give top 2 or 3 of like literally what you think no matter what this one it would have taken this
year? It would have taken 100%. Yeah. It easily would have taken visual effects over Godzilla Minus One. 100%.
Yeah.
Cinematography. It would have been a 50-50 split. It could have still gone to Hoyt Van Hoytema for Oppenheimer because he hadn't had an Oscar before. Greg Fraser has won one before, and the Oscars are all about their legacy. But I just think the cinematography in Dune Part 2 is immaculate.
Yeah.
And I easily could have seen it going to him. And then the other ones, like I said, I think they would have made them races, like 50-50 splits or added some tension. I don't know if 100%, but production design and costume design.
I don't think it would. Things. I don't think it would. I
maybe
think
not costume design. Production design, though.
I think you don't production think so?
All those
design,
different planets? Four different planets? Poor Things went to cities. Dune went to planets.
I don't know. I would it's like to think say. That production design and costumes are safe. That's just my hope.
Maybe. You're just a poor it might just apologist. Be
my personal preference, but I would hope that they're safe. I'm not sure. What do you think, Emma?
I don't know. Yeah, I could see production design. Just how much went into not using like sound stages and stuff and just being like, whoa, on location for like everything. But like costume design, it could have gone either way, I think, because there were some crazy costumes in both movies.
Yeah,
I think.
Agreed. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know. I'm excited to see what it does. I'm glad that it's not up against these guys. I'm sure I've got a lot to fall in love with over the next year, and then I'll be kind of getting worried. But right now, like, one of my favorite of the year so far. So yeah. Obviously, I hope it has a good sweep next year.
Me too. Yeah.
We live for the Oscars around here. Yeah, we're already on the countdown. We've got to 100%. Start getting our, what are like the drafts going of our predictions?
I have Dune Part 2 for Best Picture and Dune Part 2 for Visual Effects.
You're on it.
Very risky, I know.
Yeah.
But I think there's some like Sing Sing, Megalopolis, what else? Joker 2. Mm-hmm. The new Mad Max movie. There's a few that are coming out that are looking to be early awards contenders, but it'll probably be something out of Cannes or Venice or Toronto Film Festival like it is every year. But we shall see.
We'll see.
We shall.
Let's listen to a little clip of Leaving Caledon just to get us in the mood. And then we're going to chat a little bit more about production design in Dune, kind of set ourselves up there, and then move on to lighting and some cinematography. We'll see where it goes. But yeah, let's listen to a little bit. Here we are. This is Leaving Caledon from Dune Part 1.
Nice.
Okay, cool. Thanks so much. Wes was just on, gave us a little bit of a recap connecting Star Wars, Dune, also the Oscar season coming up, because you know how much we care about those. But we want to talk a little bit more about production design, set design. We've already mentioned him, Patrice Vermette.
French-Canadian.
Yippee! Woo! We love you. We're so proud of you. We feel very connected to him because he's Canadian. But some amazing production designs here. Like, do you guys have one that's just, like, your favorite that's stuck in your mind from first or second of, like, one of, I don't know, like, one of the scenes?
I really love the gladiator fight scene on Geti Prime, the Harkonnen planet. I don't know. It's just so, like, I was, like, mesmerized while watching it because, oh, my gosh, like, it just doesn't – I sound so silly saying it doesn't look real. It's like, well, it's not really real. But, like, it just is so, like, whoa. Just unbelievable. And, like, I was looking into it and, like, instead of just shooting in black and white, they shot – on infrared camera in black and white, which I don't like fully understand how that works, but it looks really cool. But yeah, it's just like it has so much like texture and the contrast is just like
it's insane.
Oh my gosh.
The fireworks go
off. It's stunning and I'm like, wow, how did they do that? And like the arena itself, like oh my gosh, the triangular shape and like just like the shadows and the light.
Yeah. It really got this evil feel to it. Like exactly what you should be getting on Harkonnen's planet, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Super creepy. No. Also very like what?
Those like things that came out when he was like
thanks for that description, Hannah.
the I don't know what they are, but when Fade is like winning, he starts winning, and then these creepy like figures with their costumes, they have like these like shapes on their heads. Yeah. I don't know, the all black outfits, and they're like weirdly like dancing and like oh my god, I was terrified.
Yeah, no, there was some like costumes were crazy.
Yeah,
in that scene as well, it's like oh my god, costumes in every scene are crazy. Yeah, though. They're going insane in that department.
Mm-hmm. But no, I just loved that like whole moment. Yeah. It was amazing. Yeah, I think that was there were so many times when Emma and I like were just like looking at each other.
Whoa!
That was definitely one of them.
Yeah, that was definitely the one that when I left the theater, that was like the sequence that I couldn't stop thinking about. I had no exactly what you're saying. Still don't really understand how they did it, but when I saw it and I left, I was like, yeah, I have no. What did they do there? And then learning a bit about what the cinematographer Greg Fraser did, using infrared camera, so we're not getting like visible light, we're just getting like what we can't see, but the camera's able to see it, and then it's like I guess converting that into what we can't see. And then I also they just took down the saturation a lot to make the feel of like that black sun really set it apart for me of like the feeling of being on each of the different planets. But also just like narrowing also again in on production design, really different feeling from the other places that blend a bit more with their environments. We do not get this on Geti Prime. Like, it is industrial. It is gray. It is, like...
It's so harsh.
It's harsh.
Just, yeah.
It's going literally opposite of with its environment. It's doing everything against its environment. And then we've got, obviously, like, the most, like, over-reference that's part of the set is him literally bathing in oil.
Yeah. I read something interesting that Vermette said when he was, like, in Montreal and he saw a bunch of septic tanks in a field, which, like, inspired the design for the planet, which I just think is so, like, it's funny, but it's like, wow, like, it really, there's that, like, inspiration everywhere. And then, you know, you're talking about the bear and, like, bathing in sludge. It's like, makes a lot of sense, you know?
Ugh, disgusting. But, yeah, I think the set, all of those things, like, drawing on industrial landscapes that we see in the real world and things that are actually happening, and then taking it to this huge extreme of like as if this entire planet, well, our entire planet's doing it too, but is like rooted in just extraction, so much greed, and just like not cooperating with the environment at all. It's really got that feeling to it.
Yeah,
it was very had an evil
No, they did that one, like, so well. And it came out of nowhere as well. It was so, yeah. such an insane sequence. Like, as it was happening, I'm like, surely it can't get any crazier. And, like, I keep going back to the fireworks and, like, just yeah. to see that, like, contrast and those flares of light. I was like, oh, my God. Like, this is beautiful. This is insane that they did this.
No, yeah. I agree. Like, yeah. yeah. Left theater.
Yeah.
Still thinking about it.
I think it helps that they're all bald as well. Yeah. So you're really seeing that contrast. Yeah.
And then you're like, okay, yeah, this is why they all look so weird, because yeah. they live on a planet that's, like, has some sort of black sun
yeah.
and,
yeah.
like, is not, yeah, very freaky. But it was also exciting to see, because we didn't really get to see this in Dune Part 1. So I guess that was also, like, yeah, you leave it because maybe that's what I was thinking. Like, we did not get a chance to see where these people yeah. were coming from, really.
Mm-hmm.
But what about the other planets? Sand planet, we have Kaladin. Kaladin, we have Paul's...
That's Paul's planet.
Awesome. Yeah.
I think that's, like, really... That's interesting in how kind of... It's how more naturalist it is, I yeah. guess. Like, I know they... what's this? Patrice said there was a lot of emphasis placed on sort of building the sets of the idea that, like, of their uses. Like, not just building them to be like, oh, this is going to look cool on camera, and just building them with, like... the idea of, like, how would these have been used? What would their purpose be, like, within the world of the film? And really, like, creating the sort of immersive feel. And I think that that's really an important thing that can be kind of missed with, like, mm-hmm. design sometimes.
Yeah. yeah.
But I think the focus on that was really, really, yeah, really well done.
Mm-hmm. I like the feeling of, like, the rooms and his bedrooms and mm-hmm. things like that feel very minimalist. But also, if you really focus in... It's not maximalist, but it's maximal in the details that yes. go into it. When you mm-hmm. see the room, there's no, like, trinkets or anything. Where are Paul's souvenirs? Like, has yeah. he not done any traveling? That's where are all his little keychains and bottles with sand in it?
Exactly.
Yeah. That's our question. No, but really, it is kind of a minimalist room. Feels kind of like a tomb or something mm-hmm. when you're in his oh, room yeah. and his house or wherever he is. But the detail, if yeah. you really, which I think makes it even more cool, because it's not just bouncing out at you, the detail, you focus in and you see these, like, stories or writing on a wall and pictures and paintings mm-hmm. and engraving on the wall and things like that. That's what I really liked.
Yeah. yeah.
No, that was really cool, especially for, like, comparatively how little time we spent there, like, how much yeah. is clearly still spent on it. Like, you know, mm-hmm. there's so much that's been put into that set. I think it really shows.
And like you were saying, like, it's just, everything is so, like, purposeful. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like we're wasting time anywhere or yeah. like just doing things for the sake of doing things, which is so important when, you know, the movie mm-hmm. is this long too mm-hmm. and has so many, like, world building things going on. Like, everything is there for a reason.
Yeah.
And you get to, you know, like you said, it maybe doesn't jump out at you, but then you think about it after and you can, like, focus on it. And it's actually, like, you know, you want to rewatch it, even if it's a longer movie. Yeah. You want to catch all those things.
And notice all those little things. Yeah, that's the other thing for me when you leave a movie and you realize I wasn't even thinking about how far in we were. You know what I mean? If yeah. sometimes you're in a movie and it's like a 2-hour whatever yeah. or 3-hour, because we've been getting so much of those lately.
yeah.
And you're like, okay, we must be, like, hitting the 3-hour. It doesn't feel like that. Yeah. And you could go back and watch it again because of all those little details.
Mm-hmm.
Any hot takes on Arrakis, though? Because we spend a lot of time there. I don't know why yeah. we haven't talked about it yet.
Oh, that is crazy. Like, I think because oh my gosh, we spent, like, yeah. so much time on Arrakis. Yeah, it's like just everything about those sets are so insane. Like, I know they found a lot of inspiration from what I read, that, like, World War II era bunkers, Mayan temples, and Brazilian modernism, which oh. is just, like, this cultural movement inspired by pre-World War I artistic trends in Europe. So it's like you kind of get a mix of, like, cubism, futurism, surrealism, and expressionism.
So much, like, time into that. Yeah. So much research, yeah.
Oh my god, and it's like you kind of, like, you look up this one building, Brazilian National Congress, and you're like, oh yeah, that looks right out of Dune. Like, yeah. you can see where they're pulling, yeah, inspiration from in the real world. It's like, oh, real world.
yeah. You're it's so just, funny, Emma. Oh,
I should go do comedy or something. Real world comedy special.
Yeah, seriously.
That's the next move. But, yeah. No, I think it's all really cool.
Yeah.
How much, like, you can see, like, kind of our own world reflected back at us. It's like, oh, yeah, I can see where they would have pulled this from.
Yeah.
It feels grounded that way.
Yeah. My friend, she, like, is really into geography and everything, and mm-hmm. she, like, told me about how, like, the Sieges were mm-hmm. inspired by Petra, which is one of the seven wonders of the world, mm-hmm. and in Jordan. It's really, it's a, you look at it and you're like, oh, wait, that's like, that is literally Arrakis. Like, it's so amazing. Yeah. And like, I don't know, it's just like, I don't have that like knowledge of like stuff out there in the world. So to see it like on screen and then learn about it from that is like, yeah, really, it, I appreciate that too.
Absolutely. It's, yeah, so intentionally done. Such a beautiful set. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love it. It was so cool to look at, especially like the city. We need help with pronunciation, by the way, if anyone wants to help it. But it's called Arrakeen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the main city,
yeah,
on the planet. And I like what they did there. It's like blending so much. Again, this is just drawing back to like what how I was thinking about Getty Prime, but of this huge contrast between something that literally the colors blend in with its surroundings, mm-hmm, versus then you go to Getty Prime and it's like completely different. You can just tell it's so industrial and like stands out pretty, yeah, well. That's what I was thinking about. But do you want to play a little song?
Yeah.
Let's play a little song. This is a tune from also Hans Zimmer. We haven't talked about score yet, but we've already played a little bit of this guy's work.
Yeah, because Hans Zimmer went crazy.
He did the score for both of the films, Dune Part 1 and Part 2.
Yeah.
This one's Resurrection. Emma says we have to play this one.
Yeah.
It's a given.
It's a given. Everyone loves Resurrection.
Let's hear it. Let's hear it. Here we are. Okay, now I understand why Emma said that it's a given that we play that one. I wasn't realizing that Resurrection was, like, the most iconic little section with the... I'm not going to do it for you. Does anyone else want to do the little voice thing?
Anyone want to acapella it?
Anyone? No. Anyone? No? Okay, maybe we'll come back with that later. But yeah, very iconic part of it. That was production design, a bit about Dune, but we also want to talk a little bit about lighting.
Yeah. No, they used natural light for most of this, which is crazy, but, like... You know, the cinematographer said, like, if you don't get the lighting right as you're shooting it, like, you can have the most skilled VFX artists in the world. Mm. They won't matter. Like, you can't fix bad lighting. So, like, there'd be times where, like, if they were filming something at, like, golden hour, where they could film for maybe 3 hours, like, per day.
Yeah.
Like, a specific scene, which is crazy.
And then if they don't get it, like, you're waiting till the next day.
You just gotta wait the next day.
The cloud coverage and everything is, like, good enough and that kind of thing.
At the mercy of, like... the elements, which is like a crazy way to shoot a film on this scale.
Oh my god, yeah.
I can't imagine, but
gotta learn the ways of the desert.
Exactly.
Just like Paul.
Oh yeah. They fully immerse themselves. I was reading things of like, that they spent like 3-4 weeks straight, the whole crew, just in the middle of the desert. That's dedication. They did learn the ways.
Exactly.
you can't say they didn't learn the ways.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But overall, these two movies went crazy for us, but also crazy in the world. Like, what do you think bigger, larger impacts of these two films coming out in the past couple years?
I mean, I don't know. I'm just thinking of, like, what comes next. Because, I mean, the way that the second film ends, right, we're kind of always waiting for, like, the next thing. And I heard how, you know, I saw, like, a headline of an article that was like, oh, like, Dune Part 3's, like, biggest challenge is that the next book kind of sucks. So I'm like, really intrigued as to, like, I don't know. And I need to read the book so then
where
I can actually
go with it, though. Yeah.
Right? But it'll be interesting, especially because of, like, you know, the 1984 one and the reputation that has. It's, like, I feel like there is a lot riding on it. Like, don't mess this up because someone's done that before. And especially now that he's, like, Denis has made, like, two really good ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that it didn't even fall off at the after the first one. I don't know if people were expecting it to fall off, but I guess, like, my instinct, like, whenever the first of a series is so well received, there's like a bit of a worry we might drop off a bit, but no, like not a drop off. A lot of people are saying they like this one better.
Yeah,
so it's like that even like
that puts
makes
the
stakes
on.
Even higher because like you even outdid the first one. Like you got to keep going.
Yeah, you got to like kill it for the third.
Yeah, I'm excited but scared. I also did see that he was like, I will only make part three if I know it's going to be better than part two.
Oh my god.
So I don't know exactly.
As if he's just gonna be like, meh.
Yeah, like, never mind. All of you guys can deal with it. Yeah. I don't fully believe him on that, but, I mean, we'll see. But I don't know. It's just, like, yeah, there's so much, like, riding on it now. And, like, I know I will be seated as soon as that comes out.
She'll be in her sandworm costume.
Yeah.
Yes. Would you still love me if I was a sandworm?
That is the question.
That's the question we've all been asking.
We can't wait. We'll all be seated.
Yeah.
Well, that was our little episode on Dune. Any last closing thoughts or anything?
Dune goes crazy. If you haven't seen it, go see it.
Go see
Dune. Sit your butt down for 6 hours, watch it, lock in, get some popcorn. You'll be immersed. Consider everything we've said about lighting, sound.
Yeah. My parents watched it and they didn't fall asleep.
Exactly.
So,
it's time to go see it.
Boom.
Well, thank you, Hannah, so much for coming on. We hope to have you back on an episode again soon.
Oh, yes, I'd love to come back.
And tune in again in 2 weeks' time. For another episode of The Real World.
Yeah, that's it for us.
All right. See ya. Bye.